Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC doesn't just measure alumni engagement scores. It uses academic research in cognitive science and positive psychology to actually increase an alum's willingness to give. Quantitative data, such as capacity, gets a prospect into your pipeline, but qualitative data, such as impact stories, gets a prospect through your pipeline. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights and automatically delivers them to major gift officers for use in cultivation. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive's training. If you're looking to align your entire team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about Responsive's four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, let's ensure that everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you prefer a virtual event, that'll work too. Let's get your team thinking critically and more carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I will also put some information in the show notes. Hi, Linda. Thank you for being today's guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. You and I have known each, I think we've known each other for a couple of years. I think you were on our book launch team when my first book came out. And I'm delighted to have you on the podcast. I think we've had a little difficulty getting it scheduled. I apologize for that, but here you are. Before we dive into our topic of the day, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Thank you so much, Jason. I am Linda McNay. And I have been raising money in Atlanta, Georgia for about 30 years. I've worked in every sector and I've had every development job. And I have been a consultant now for a long time, many years, first at a large consulting firm. And then since 2013, I've had my own business and it's called Our Fundraising Search.
So, Linda, I was on a panel about three to four weeks ago, and the question of, they were sort of asking me and the rest of the people on the panel about sort of our read on sort of where fundraising was. And one of the things I pointed out, one of the things I said was that I anticipate a lot of movement in sort of this post or in the midst of and sort of this post-COVID sort of reality. What's your thoughts on that?
Ah, well, I'm happy to tell you what I'm seeing. I'm seeing movement. It is not always purposeful, nor is it very well planned. And I'm talking about both sides, both the employer and the development officers who might be in transition. You would think there'd be more good movement than there is because of the change that's out there. But I almost am seeing silence. So I'm accustomed to gathering resumes from all kinds of individuals, students right out of college who think they want to be in development, people who are looking for their next development job, and then corporate types who think they want to be in development. So I might have about 1,200 resumes on any given day, and we are getting very few resumes now. And the ones I'm getting are way overqualified, people with lots more experience than maybe I even have, and then people with no experience. And I got my very first hairstylist who applied for a development job the other day, and I've never had that before. So what we look for in our work are more mid-level development professionals with several years experience just looking for their next role. And I've been surprised. So it's the people in the middle who still have their jobs now, and they're not willing to move. They don't want to take a risk right now. And I don't really blame them.
Yeah.
What's frightening to me is those top level senior development folks who are in the market because they've been laid off or furloughed or some combination. So I guess that's what I'm campaigning on today is I can't believe nonprofits are so short-sighted in a pandemic to let people go if they're in the development area.
So one of the things that so I've had a couple of guests, but a lot of times the people that I'm talking to aren't necessarily going to go on the record. the people that I've talked to in the last 6 months that have sort of indicated a willingness or a desire to move, they also seem to be correlating or the people. And I would say this sort of, that's sort of the dark side, the people who I would say are moving. And then the sort of the more positive side, the people who are not moving, tends to be related to what COVID has actually revealed to them as to, let me get this straight. COVID seems to have revealed to a lot of employees what is right or wrong about their employers and how they carry out their fundraising efforts. And so what I'm saying is that if you're the fundraising professional who's deciding to go somewhere, COVID has pointed out some things, maybe some things that were obvious before, but they've become glaringly obvious now. And vice versa, I think some organizations, perhaps those mid-range sort of talent that you're referring to, have found that actually my organization weathered this thus far just fine, and so I have no reason to go. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm seeing both sides of that as well. So if you assume that the average tenure of a development officer is about 14 months, at least that was pre-COVID, and I think there's a few reasons for that. Most of us get a year to prove ourselves. And at the end of the year, and you look and see what happened, if the person was doing a good job, they'll go down the street and make more money because they're likely not going to get very big of a raise or very big of promotion, even if they did a good job. And if they didn't do a good job and the organization didn't raise enough money, then they might be let go. So that's what was happening about 14 months as a tenure of a development officer. So now we have a whole new ball game because we have people coming and going. Some organizations are using this as a time to get rid of people that they would have wanted to get rid of anyway, and now they have an excuse. And they might not have wanted to go through the process before. So individuals who were out there looking, you know, say they were at the end of their 14 months and they were looking, we're seeing jobs go away. So anybody who gave their leave notice without securing their new job in writing might have been in trouble. And I've had several cases of that where people took the leap, thought they had three opportunities, were going to take one of them, and then they all three went away, which is pretty sad because now there aren't a lot of opportunities. The people who were looking to leave just for their next opportunity, maybe their employer wasn't even that terrible to work with at their nonprofit. They were just bored or ready for the next step. Now they're going, oh, this isn't such a bad place after all. I better stick here for a while. I've seen people, EDs who might be the chief fundraiser as well as the fundraisers, say, you know, I had given my leave. I was going to retire or I was going to go on and do something else, but I'm going to stay. And the nonprofit's letting them stay. They want them to stay so they have that security of having somebody there. And then finally, there are so many people out there now looking. Every day I'll get a call from somebody who said they were let go. One of my very favorite nonprofits here in Atlanta, and I won't name them, had a chief development officer for 14 years, which doesn't happen in our world.
Right. Nope.
And she was let go. And the CEO said, yeah, I'm going to do it. I even called him. I'm like, what? What were you thinking? I can't believe. And of course, she was devastated. You do everything right, and this is what happened. So I
think there's people, and I think I've probably had some of those people as my guest here on the podcast. So if you're 10 to 15 years, that like that person there, you're 10 to 15 years into the job. I was telling you this before we hit the record button. I think a lot of our listeners tend to be the people who are thinking very critically about their work. They're not looking for tips and tricks. And they're thinking, they're going to listen to this conversation and they're going to think very critically about how this might apply to their sort of journey. So what does a person who's 14 years in have to know about themselves, their own professional development? Why wasn't the signs there for him or her ahead of time? I would be driving me bonkers if I was, and I admit I'm a control freak every once in a while. So, but why do you get, how do you get 14 years in and then somebody just lets you go like that? I don't care if it's COVID or not.
Well, I don't think it would have happened without COVID. Nobody would have made that move. And she probably never would have left. She would have stayed there forever. Plus, now she's taken her donors with her. It's short-sighted of the nonprofit. So for nonprofits who were not well endowed, didn't have a reserve fund, they're all in a panic. Now, when this started, I was thinking, oh, we'll all have a little few weeks vacation and we'll get more done and get organized at home and my desk and this will be over. Well, it's not over and I don't think it's going to be over. So right. What I'm looking ahead, which all of us need to be. So if you have a job, you probably want to hang on to it, but prepare yourself for the next one and move very carefully. There are people who are still hiring and it's small to medium sized nonprofits. They're the ones that don't have a deep bench. So if you have a large university with 300 people in development, if they may or may not have had layoffs, they probably are having furloughs. They're probably not giving raises. Professional development may have dried up. If somebody leaves, they won't fill the spot. But there are still jobs at that organization. At small to medium-sized organizations, if the fundraiser is a small shop or a one-person shop and they leave, there is nobody to do the work. And even if the CEO thinks they can, at some point they're going to go, oh. So there will be jobs as the chief development officer and maybe not as pleasant a situation as you might like. So if you want to challenge, those jobs are still out there. So I believe you got to really be passionate about an organization. I'm not sure you agree with me, Jason. We could probably debate that. But if you care about an organization and you're willing to work really hard, there are still jobs out there.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the things that I have heard a lot of, and I had one of the guys at Bloomerang on the podcast here recently, and he was talking about the rate at which the, you know, a lot of the data that they're tracking in their system is indicating that the telephones are being picked up with a greater rate, at a greater rate, and the donors on the other end are answering these telephone calls. And I'm wondering if some of the movement that we're seeing, good, bad, or otherwise, for whatever reasons, is going to have to do with the fact that we're going to start to see a more highly engaged, the expectation for a more highly engaged fundraiser. And if you've been using some of these arms link tactics that I tend to be very critical of, that's not going to sail the ship very long. Do you follow what I'm asking?
I think so. I mean, if I'm old school, and it was all about personal in-person solicitations. And we're not always able to do that now. And if we are, it's not necessarily desirable. So we're having to learn technology. We talked about this morning what you're using. Yeah. So all of us are learning new tricks. And we probably are picking up the phone more because there's not a lot of other choices. How many Zoom calls can one do in a day?
Yes.
Or whatever technology you might be using. But I'm thinking the new development shop is not going to be like we remember it, where we might continue to work remotely at least part of the time. I'm doing a search currently for an organization that doesn't want the person to work remotely. I'm like, really? Ever? Not even one day a week? So I think we're all going to have to transition into that, and we're going to have to be better at what we do. So those of us, if you're you have years of experience in development, you already had relationships when COVID started. So now it's a matter of stewardship and maintaining those relationships. And that's easier because you already knew them before. But it should be more hands-on, absolutely, in terms of writing personal notes. I still like to get notes. I'm still writing notes. And I pick up the phone lots more than I used to, where I might have sent a text.
Does that prospective employer who doesn't want their candidate, their new development officer, to work remotely, is that because they're quite determined to have the individual in the office? And so it's, I want to see you in the office, or is it because I want to see you in front of the donor, which is to say, I want you out in the community sitting at the lunch tables and in the coffee shops?
Well, it's a new position and probably a new manager who's going to be supervising this person. And I think it's lack of experience. All of us who do development know that we are out of the office. And if we're in the office, that's where the problem lies. So they're just going to have to, we've been able to educate them on a number of things, and we will keep working at that one, because all of us will be working remotely more, even if it's not exclusively.
Yeah. So where do you see that? So let's say, for example, COVID, let's say, for example, we do come up with a vaccine in the next, say, 6 months. Is fundraising going to essentially have changed, or are we going to resume? Are we going to get back to normal, 12 months from now? Are the events going to be back on the calendar? Is direct mail going to be as strong as it was before? And is it going to be business as usual, or is the job description? I mean, as someone who's actually, I mean, you're looking at job descriptions all the time. Is the job description 12 months out from now actually going to change?
Well, my position on this pandemic is based on my experience. So I was working in a school environment after 9/11, and it took us a while, but we recovered quickly because of our constituency group. I was working in development at an arts institution after 2008 when the economy crashed. Arts was the last thing to come back. So depending on what sector you're in and what role you're in and what kind of job you've done during the pandemic, we're going to have to all be a little bit flexible. So I think that, let's see, this is August, September. A year from now, we're going to see everybody rolling out a new capital campaign, assuming we have the vaccine and we're all getting it and things get back to normal. So I'm telling my clients, they got to be ready. I'm also telling them that this year we might not be worrying about the annual fund. Let's all be doing major gifts. And if you are a development officer at whatever level, then that's what you should be focused on. And then you can say, well, I raised this much money from this many people, or my average gift is $10,000 or $100,000, and be tracking that while we're learning new technology so you have more skills and results. So if we're doing stewardship and major gifts now, by the spring, hopefully we'll all be preparing for our campaign and getting back to as normal as possible. Then I think we'll be able to see people and do our personal solicitation again. So if someone was moving, they might want to be thinking that by late spring so they could be on board at their new place doing all these activities to prepare. Because everybody won't be able to do a capital campaign at the same time. It'll be the organizations that are ready that do the best.
So if you're starting a campaign in let's say mid 2021, and we're assuming that the vaccine or COVID becomes manageable to the point that it can, and you're suggesting that hypothetically, we're talking about an organization that is perhaps thinking this way. They've got a capital campaign that they want to launch in mid 2021. They're not that organization that's letting people go, I'm assuming.
Not necessarily. I don't know that they are all going to have the tools in place. It just depends.
Is that the organization that's hiring? That's the organization that's letting that 14-year-old veteran go. Help me understand who that or if that organization is. If you're sitting consulting with that organization today, what sort of hiring decisions or firing decisions is that organization making?
Well, they're probably not following what I would do, and that would be to maintain whatever development shop I had.
They've just signed a really big fat contract with you, so they have to listen.
I wish that was the case. My advice to clients, if asked, is that they should never let a development officer go. And if they're not doing as great a job as you want, then they need training and education so they can do. Sure. Let's get the right people in the right seats. That should be one of the tasks an organization is doing to get ready for a campaign. So revising the case up or down, how much is it going to cost now, more or less, whatever the projects are that they wanted to fund, who's going to be on the team. And I'm not just talking about development officers, but board members and development committee. I'm probably second only to the shortage of great development officers is the shortage of great board members. And we're taking steps with our clients to do something about that now and building that leadership team. And then, of course, the CEO. And CEOs are not always the best fundraisers. So we have an opportunity in the next few months to educate and recruit all the right people and put them all in the right seats so that the organization can move ahead.
Okay, so I always promise my listeners and my guests sort of a curveball. So let's talk about the roles that you and I play in perhaps large associations like AFP, training organizations, consulting, executive search. What is the role that we're playing going to evolve in your mind in the next 12 months?
I think our role will become even more important, because some of us have seen these downturns, whatever the results of what was going on in the economy. And because we've been through it, we know the steps to take. So I'm building my team. I've added people to my team. We're still doing searches. They're just not in person. They're remote. I still have client work. It's not capital campaigns. It's coaching. But my work is no longer limited to Atlanta. So my last three clients were in Virginia, Alabama, and Kentucky. So during COVID, organizations need our help. Post-COVID, I think they're going to need us more than ever.
And what is it they're asking us to do? I tend to think, here's my theory. I'm doing some writing. A lot of my listeners have heard me talk about this. I think about my professional career in fundraising, and you've sort of pointed the three sort of markers. I'm thinking about my fundraising career began largely around the time of September 11th, and we had the 2007-2008 recession, and now we have COVID-19. And I think that career path, for someone who's say 20 years in, that career path proves to be a very unpredictable. There's not a lot of certainty in that. And I tend to think that the roles that people like yourself and myself, you think about capital campaigns, for example, I have a friend of mine who paid $35,000 for a feasibility study before, without any, there was no knowledge. There was no knowledge whatsoever that COVID was going to actually land in his lap. There's no way a feasibility study could have predicted that. How are we going to evolve perhaps to address that sort of level of that awareness, I guess, is what I'm asking. You can't sell a feasibility study and predict COVID-19.
Maybe we can next time. There'll be another virus. There'll be something else. This week we may have two hurricanes. There's always going to be something out there. In fact, I've written fundraising plans that the very last section are what are the things that could happen to keep us from reaching goal. So now I'm going to have to add pandemic to that little list. But it's not an excuse. We have to be nimble and flexible and able to respond when these things happen. I still see donors giving money away. Everybody's staying home, so they have more disposable income. If you're watching the stock market, it's still up. People still have money. The people with money still have it. Yeah. So if we ask them, they'll still give. So nonprofits, even if I've heard everything from 40 to 50% of them going away, some of them probably should go out of business if they weren't doing a good job or there was competition in their market. But there's going to be nonprofits and they're going to need great development officers to work with them. So even if our career paths are unpredictable, we still have a career path. The development position will still be critical as we move forward. I rate it right behind the ED in terms of importance. Don't tell the CFO or the HR person or any of those other folks.
Yeah. I definitely just think it's interesting that you pointed out that you're for example, doing coaching. I tend to think that it's the coaches who are called upon to know how to ask really good questions, to encourage their clients to ask really good questions rather than having the answers. And so I just wonder if some of the work that people like yourself and myself and, the other shops out there, I wonder if there's going to be a realization that, look, we're not gurus. We're, we like to throw around the word expert, but we don't necessarily have all the answers for you.
Well, it's funny you should bring that up. I had a client last week on a coaching call. In the first few minutes, she was ranting about something that had happened or not happened. And she said, well, you know how important our calls are. The first few minutes are always therapy.
Yeah.
That's right. So yeah, we're good listeners. That's part of what fundraisers are. We all listen. We listen to the donor. We listen to our colleagues. We listen to our boss. And then we do the best we can with the information that we have. So yes, I consider myself a coach and a cheerleader. And I'm advising my development clients to be patient with all that's going on around them, because we always have new information, whether it's the election or the virus. And we got to hang in there, that our work is important and it will still be important. And even if there's a change in our personal circumstances, there are other opportunities. We can't just give up.
Yeah. What you might call a professional intimacy there that I think people are looking for with someone like yourself, but I don't think that they're looking for us to sort of predict the future. And sort of guarantee them outcomes that you and I have no way of sort of, I mean, we don't have a crystal ball. And I think some of what, just like I think the fundraising profession itself is doing a little bit of growing up in the last couple of decades, I think the people that are in our seat are perhaps doing a little bit of growing up and realizing that some of the things that we can deliver on are not quite as, quite as assured as maybe we've historically liked them to be. Linda, you have this, I've got to get you to talk about this for a few minutes, and it kind of goes in line with this idea of therapy, but this rhythm that you do, I think you do it once a month in a local park. And I'm wondering if you're able to keep it up in the midst of COVID-19.
You're talking about walk with a consultant.
Yes, ma'am.
So once a month, I go for a walk in our local Piedmont Park. It's a beautiful space. There's a lake. There's ducks. It's just a beautiful location, and it's central to Atlanta, so anybody can go there at any time. And years ago, I started this mostly out of self-preservation. So I get a lot of calls from people who want to chat about their next role or something. And it got to where I couldn't meet with every individual personally in order to have the conversation that I wanted to. Otherwise, I would never get any of my work done.
Right.
So I purposely put together a group. And I said, just come walk with me in the park on Sunday afternoon, and there may be more people there, and we'll all talk and network. You can ask me anything you want about fundraising or about the job market and development. And it's been very popular. I've been doing it for years. We've gone 350,000 steps, which is about 245 miles. Not that I'm counting. And we've had lots of wonderful things happen. I've met new people. I've learned about new organizations. My very favorite story that happened was a friend of mine showed up, hadn't seen her for a while, and she wasn't looking for a job. She wanted to be on a board. That's what she wanted to talk about. And then the next two young people that showed up were starting a school on the west side of Atlanta, and they were looking for board members. Well, we walked around for an hour and a half, and at the end of our walk and a wonderful conversation, that little school had a new board member. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't usually happen that fast, but that's the whole idea, where it was a comfortable sharing opportunity for us to see what's happening. Now, we moved to virtual because even though we go rain or shine, I've been out when it was 3 degrees and rain. If it's thundering and lightning, then we don't go. We've probably missed a handful in the last few years. But when switching to virtual isn't quite as fun. It's just like meeting in person at the coffee shop is so much better than talking on the phone or Zoom. I hope that we'll get back in person soon. It'll be one of the first things I start back because we'll be outdoors. And even with a mask, it will be better than staying home. And we get a little exercise and fresh air, all good things for our health.
Linda, it has been a pleasure to have you on the Fundraising Talent Podcast today. I am sure there's people listening, perhaps in the Atlanta area or in the Southeast or maybe somewhere around the country, and they're thinking about, maybe they're thinking about transitioning, or maybe they're thinking about hiring someone and they've probably thought, hey, Linda would be a great person for them to talk to. How would you suggest that they reach out to you if that's the conversation they want to have?
Well, I hope all of the listeners are keeping their resumes up to date, because you never know when you might need that. If you're interested in a job, you could submit it at our website, ourfundraisingsearch.com, and we keep those and talk to everybody who's qualified. If you want a personal conversation with me about hiring or about your own career, then I'm happy to hear from you at linda.mcnay@gmail.com. Sorry. I also have an email on the website.
Okay. Well, we will certainly put that information in the show notes. Linda, it has certainly been a pleasure. Next time I'm in Atlanta, we'll sit down. I think we've talked about this before. Is we need to sit down and have a cup of coffee or lunch sometime.
Or we could take a walk.
Or we could take a walk. Yes. Yes. We could take a walk around the park. Yes. What's the name of that? What is the name? Is that Piedmont Park or is it?
Piedmont Park.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what
back
I thought.
In the middle of in-town Atlanta. It's beautiful.
Yes. That's what I had a guess that it was probably Piedmont Park. Thank you, Linda. It's certainly been a pleasure to have you on today.
Thank you, Jake.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.